So thank you very much, Celine, for the invitation to speak, and also Luca, of course, for organizing this wonderful conference. It's a pleasure to be here and be able to tell you something about some work that hopefully should appear soon with Laurent and Daniele. So in the recent years, the connection between soft theorems and asymptotic symmetries has led us to think that gravity in four-dimensional asymptotically flat spacetimes admits a dual description in terms of a theory in two dimensions that lives on the celestial sphere. So the map between these two theories was already discussed yesterday in Romain's talk. But let me remind you how this works. So the idea is that we start with some scattering observable in four dimensions, and these scattering observables are labeled by momenta of on-shell particles. So if we restrict to massless scattering, we'll have these momenta being labeled by an energy and two angles. So here we can trade these two angles via stereographic projection for a point on the celestial sphere. And what one can do is to take these observables and map them to an observable that lives on the two-dimensional celestial sphere, which is then has the same properties, or rather has some of the symmetries characterizing two-dimensional conformal field theories. So in particular, the new observables will transform as correlation functions of primary operators in a two-dimensional conformal field theory. Now, the map between these two is given by a Mellin transform, so again, in the case of massless particles, in which case plane wave or momentum eigenstates are traded for boost eigenstates. So in particular, this energy omega is traded for a boost weight delta. Now, important in this construction is this idea that plane waves, which are typically the basis in which usual scattering amplitudes are computed, are traded for a conformal primary basis, or in particular, plane waves are traded for these wave functions, phi, that are labeled by a dimension delta, by a point in space-time, and by a unit, by a null vector p hat. Now, in order for this new conformal primary basis to capture all of the dynamics of four-dimensional scattering, they have to form a basis, that is, they have to form a complete and orthogonal set of wave functions. And in this work, about 5 years ago, it was shown that in order for these conformal primary wave functions to form a basis, just like plane waves do, these dimensions delta have to lie on the so-called principal series, but so take the form 1 plus I lambda, where lambda is a real number. Now, there is an immediate puzzle here, namely the fact that it is well known that while conformal primary wave functions have nice properties under Lorentz transformations, or the global conformal symmetries that act on the celestial sphere, they have stranger properties under other symmetries, so for example, translations. So translations in particular, they shift the dimensions of these external operators by one. So an immediate puzzle is that the action of translations shifts us off this so-called, let me not call it principal series because it's not directly related to the principal series representations that we've seen before, but it takes us off this 1 plus I lambda set of wave functions. And as we'll see later, there are all these other additional symmetries that, for example, we have heard about from Laurent before. They also shift us off this 1 plus I lambda series. And so the natural question we can ask is whether there exists a basis that under which the action of the symmetries is preserved. And so such a basis, and it's been discussed, it's been under debate in the community for a couple of years now, that perhaps there exists an integer dimension basis in which celestial amplitudes, so these observables that live on the celestial sphere, may have nicer properties. So this is the question I'm going to be addressing today, and so I'm going to be starting by describing the Tower of Soft Theorems and how they are associated with charge conservation, and this will motivate us to introduce this tower of operators of negative integer dimensions that play an important role in celestial holography. And then I'm going to introduce, so I'm also going to call these operators memories or soft operators. I'm also going to introduce the Goldstone operators, and I will show that these are canonically conjugate to this tower of soft operators, and then I will argue that either of these two towers forms a basis under certain assumptions that I will describe. And then as an application, I'm going to describe, first of all, how to express the soft and the hard charges in terms of these towers, and then I'm going to comment on dressings and soft S matrices in gravity. So let me review the story that we developed with Laurent and Daniele at the end of last year. So we, using the symmetries, so the asymptotic symmetries of asymptotically flat spacetimes, one can reorganize the metric components in terms of some charges Q that have nice transformation properties. And this allows us to recast pieces of the Einstein equations near scry in terms of a system of differential equations for these charges. So here, Q0 are related to the complex mass aspect, Q1 are related to the angular momentum aspect, and the, all of the QSs for S greater than or equal to 2, you should think about as being related to the transverse metric components in a 1 over R expansion. Or if you want the components of the Psi 0 Weyl tensor in a large R expansion. So these are not directly the complex mass aspect and the angular momentum aspect as we've seen before, but they are shifted in such a way that they transform as primaries with respect to the extended BMS group. Now in this equation, this D is covariant derivative on the sphere, and wherever we have these inverse U derivatives, you should think about them as integrals with respect to U. So upon identifying these quantities, as I said, one can rewrite at large R, one can rewrite the Einstein equations in this simple form. Well, for S greater than 3, there is actually corrections here, but let me not go into this. Now, the charges, so I should also say that this superscript K here are related to expansions of these charges in terms of how many number of oscillators they contain. So these charges are highly nonlinear. So they have a linear component, which we're going to call the node with a superscript 1. And then they're going to have a quadratic component, so something proportional, for example, to the nu times the shear. So this would be a Q2. And for arbitrary S, there's going to be S minus 1 terms in this expansion containing more and more powers of oscillators. Now, using these equations and subject to boundary conditions, so in particular the values of these charges for S equal to minus 1 and minus 2, that will just be determined by the shear and the nus, one can solve these equations. And using the canonical bracket, so the commutation relations of the nus and the shear, one can then compute the action of these objects on the shear, on the gravitational phase space, if you want, so on the shear at scry. Now, the puzzle is that if one just takes these quantities and then takes the limit as, so here we're working at scry plus, so we take the limit as u goes to minus infinity, which is where these charges should be defined, as we've seen in previous talks, one finds infinity. So these charges are actually not, the action of these charges is not well defined, but one can make these actions well defined by introducing these new quantities little q, s, by taking particular linear combinations of this big big q, s charges. And upon doing so, one can find that actually the action of now these little q charges are well defined. So what is the relationship? Why am I calling these charges? So what we have shown in this work is that actually if one truncates these charges to quadratic order in oscillators, one can show that a matching condition, which one can also think about as conservation of these charges in time, implies the tower of soft theorems found, you know, in the amplitudes literature in previous years. So how does this connection work? So first of all, one can notice that the linear charges are related upon quantization to soft gravitons. So here, A and A dagger are creation and annihilation operators associated with positive and negative helicity gravitons. And just by direct calculation, one can show that the linear charges are directly related, okay, up to derivatives, to soft gravitons. What do I mean by soft gravitons? Well, just particular terms, if one thinks about an expansion of the amplitude in powers of small omega, then the leading term in that expansion is called a leading soft graviton, and all of the subleading terms are called subleading soft gravitons, and the role in life of this projection operator is to actually pick out a particular term in the Taylor expansion in small omega. So this S here labels the how subleading in this expansion we are going. Okay, so this is one component of this sort of proof, and then the other one is that the quadratic charges, which again can be directly computed from this set of differential equations, has a particular action on the shear that one can compute, and it takes this form. So it looks a little bit complicated, but if one looks in the celestial or perhaps amplitudes literature, what one finds at the end of the day is that upon imposing this conservation of these charges in time, or the matching condition across spatial, spatial infinity, then one finds precisely the tower of soft theorems. So here, on one side, we find an amplitude with an insertion of a soft graviton, and then on the other side, these actions of the quadratic charges on asymptotic states, what they do is that they precisely reproduce this this tower of soft factors that appears in the soft theorem. Okay, so what I haven't said is that these charges, in order for the charges to be well-defined, one has to assume certain quite strong fall-offs on the news at the future and past boundaries of scribe plus as well as scribe minus. So I'm going to refer to this as an IR condition. And moreover, we'll see later on that in order for the discrete basis, the discrete wave functions to form a basis, one also needs to assume a quite strong condition in Fourier space, so namely that the Fourier transform of the news is also exponentially suppressed at large energies. So these two conditions, you can think about them as describing a set of certain functions that are particularly localized both in a position space and in frequency space. This condition on the news in frequency space is reminiscent to a condition that was introduced in previous work in celestial amplitudes, where and implies that if one goes to the Mellon basis, to this conformal primary basis, then celestial amplitudes as functions of external dimensions delta have no poles in the right-hand complex delta plane. Okay, so this exponential suppression as the function of energy implies the existence there are no poles in the complex in the right-hand complex delta plane. Okay, so with this background, let me now introduce what I mean by these towers of memories and goldstones. So first of all, these operators we have seen before. So we introduce these memory operators, where plus minus denotes is associated with the helicity of the graviton, and here we're taking the residue of this Mellon transform of the news, so the conformal primary. I introduced at the beginning this conformal primary wave functions by taking Mellon transforms with respect to omega, and we take the residue at delta equal to a negative integer. And what this turns out to do is to precisely correspond, so these operators M are in one-to-one correspondence with these subleading soft gravitons that we've seen before. What's interesting is that they also under the UV assumption that I showed on the previous slide, one can also show that these operators M appear in a Taylor expansion of the Fourier transform of the nus. Now, in terms of representation theory of these operators in the celestial sphere, you can think about these M operators as before as soft operators, and then the charges that are associated, that enter in this soft theorems are obtained from the soft operators by acting with descendants on the celestial sphere, so by acting in particular with S plus two derivatives with respect to Z. And so these diamonds, so this is a diamond that is valid for S greater or equal than three. In particular, the lower S diamonds, so the 0, 1, and 2, have been discussed extensively in these other works. Okay, so in addition to this memories, there is also Tower of Goldstone operators that are instead defined by just evaluating the Mellin transform of the nus at positive integer dimensions delta. These operators, in contrast to the memory operators or soft operators introduced before, they appear in a Taylor expansion of the shear in position space. So again, in order for this to work, one has to assume the IR condition that I introduced before. And what is the physical interpretation of these operators? Well, they are related to other operators called Goldstone operators that appear in dressed amplitudes. So these dressings typically ensure that scattering amplitudes in gravity are free of infrared divergences. So these operators are completely different from the ones that we described before, right, as we can see here. And again, they fit nicely in the celestial diamond. So now we can get from these Goldstone operators to these other Goldstone operators S, again, by taking descendants. Now, so I said before that these two sets are canonically paired to one another. And so to see that, one can start with the symplectic potential in gravity that is expressed in terms of the usual shear and the nus. And again, this is the usual bracket that I have used without stating, I guess, before, but this is very standard. And the first step is to notice that this symplectic potential can be actually split into two components, into a plus and a minus one, that follow from the decomposition of the shear and the nus into positive and negative frequency components. So upon using the two formulas before, so namely the fact that the Goldstone operators appear in this expansion of the shear and the definition of the soft operators in terms of the nus, so substituting, for example, this expression into this formula and identifying the remaining contribution, the remaining integral over U with these conformally soft operators, one arrives at a simple formula for this symplectic potential that just involves these memory and these Hermitian conjugates of the Goldstone modes before. So here we see that we have traded this continuum, this integral over U, into a sum from n equal to 0 to infinity over all these towers, these integer operators, these integer memory and conformally and Goldstone modes. So that formula also allows us to read off what the canonical bracket is between these memory and the Goldstone operators, and this takes this simple form. And if you're more familiar with the celestial literature, one can also work in the dual picture where one has conformal primary wave functions instead and evaluates the inner products of these conformal primary wave functions with the bulk, say here, gravitational field, which is precisely what gives us these operators that I introduced before, these conformal primary operators. And the statement that these towers of memory or Goldstone modes form a basis can be translated into the statement that these conformal primary wave functions are orthogonal and complete with respect to the Klein-Gordon inner product. And one can show this precisely under the UV and IR assumptions that I have shown before. So they're not complete in particular in general, but only on sets of functions that are that fall off sufficiently fast in frequency space, if you want. Okay, so I think I'm already basically running out of time, or how much time do I have left? Okay, so I have some time to discuss two applications of these ideas. So one of them is that one can use this discrete basis to decompose the asymptotic charges in the following way. So let's start with the S equal to zero component, which is just the complex mass. So here, the linear piece in this is just the leading soft graviton, as we saw before, which one can relate to the corresponding charge by also integrating against the function on the sphere. So this tau is just an arbitrary function of the sphere on the sphere, which allows us to pick out a particular mode on the sphere of these charges. And so, so there is a one-to-one correspondence between the linear piece in the complex mass aspect and the S equal to zero linear charges. One can also do this for arbitrary S, and this is the formula for the linear charges for arbitrary S. So you see they're directly related to these memory operators that I introduced before. Now what about, more interestingly, the quadratic components can also be expressed in terms of these memory and the Goldstone operators. So again, for S equal to zero, they take this relatively simple form, while for arbitrary S, there is an additional sum here from L equal to zero to S. And this formula, for example, can be used to very easily compute these commutation relations, so these actions of these quadratic charges on, for example, the nus and the shear. They can also be used to compute, at least in principle, the algebra of these charges that was shown previously in work with again, Laura and Daniele to obey, at least to leading order, this W infinity algebra. So we are hoping that these formulas are going to simplify some of these calculations in this charge algebras. Now, I discussed the formula for arbitrary S, but I should also say that we also have a Ricardian relation that allows us to write down recursively all of the nonlinear components of the charge at arbitrary level S. But I'm going to discuss that. Now, as a second application, and in particular to understand better what's going on with these Goldstone modes, one can also introduce these coherent states or these dressings that take this particular form. So here, this integral over dz of this g that here, okay, I'm not defining, this is just the Green's function for d to the s plus 2. So for the derivative, for s plus 2 derivatives with respect to z on the celestial sphere. Now, this operator is precisely this Goldstone mode, so it inverts this relationship between these s's and the g's I described before. And so for s equal to 0, this this exponential, so this coherent state, is nothing but the dressing introduced by Dirac a long time ago, or Fadev and Kulish, who argued that that trading the usual momentum eigenstates for such asymptotic states ensures that soft infrared divergences are removed. And so the net scattering amplitudes are free of infrared divergences. But here we see that we have this whole tower of Goldstone modes. One can include the whole tower of Goldstone modes in this expression, which is a generalization of the usual Fadev and Kulish dressing. And one way to see that this is something reasonable is to actually look at the scattering amplitude where one has n exchanges of gravitons. so represented here by these ladder diagrams, and evaluate these amplitudes by using the usual Feynman rules, but where these vertices, instead of replacing them with the usual soft factors, which is what Weinberg in 65 has done to extract the contribution from infrared divergent soft gravitons to the scattering amplitude. So replace these vertices by the full tower of soft theorems. And this allows us to actually correct the soft S matrix in this particular form. So the soft S matrix, again, it resums the contributions from all modes of the gravitons propagating between any pair of external legs. And just by generalizing this Weinberg calculation in this way, one arrives at a nice formula for the soft S matrix that involves this full tower of Goldstone operators. And I should say that another way to see this is that to sort of motivate this construction is that we'd like to kind of work with asymptotic states that transfer nicely under the full tower of these W infinity symmetries, and so these states are such that they diagonalize the tower of soft charges that I introduced before, or the tower of these M operators that I introduced before. Okay, so let me conclude. So in summary, we have seen that we can get to the tower of soft theorems from conservation laws associated with an infinite number of charges. We have introduced these canonically paired Goldstone modes, canonically paired to these memory modes or soft modes, and I argued that they form a basis of operators or wave functions for sufficiently localized wave packets. And then I have shown two applications. One of them was to express the usual soft and hard charges in terms of these towers of soft modes, and the other one related to this Fadeev-Kulish construction and a generalization thereof to include this full tower of Goldstone modes. So there are many open questions, and one of them would be to understand what the implication of this is for celestial amplitudes, and in particular, the role of these Goldstone operators, so this integer delta operators in celestial amplitudes, has not been understood very well, and one of the questions is whether there can be additional constraints coming from these operators on celestial amplitudes. Another one would be to actually find a physical interpretation other than a symmetry-based one, of these infrared finite terms that one adds to these dressings. So why should we consider such dressings involving towers of operators? And this may be relevant for the story of higher dimensional dressed amplitudes. And then finally, there's questions about logarithmic soft theorems and logarithmic modes and loop corrections to the soft theorems. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Anna, and we have time for questions.
So when you wrote the dressing factors in as integrals in DP, like the standard form, the integral is really between zero, which is what really cures the singularity, to some small but non-zero factor, which is physical. I mean, it depends on the resolution of your system. So how does that translate into the other amplitudes, the celestial amplitudes?
I glossed over the subtleties, or I didn't have time, but let me comment on this, because it's important. So here these operators already involve this integral over energies. So in principle, in momentum space, as Fadeev and Kulish did, as you said, there is this UV, I mean, there is a soft hard cutoff involved in these definitions. But in a conformal primary basis, actually, it's natural to consider, but that cutoff, I should say, that as you know, it breaks Lorentz invariance. However, in a conformal, and in order not to break Lorentz invariance, you can imagine defining these operators by integrating from zero to infinity. But in momentum space, this doesn't make sense because momentum conservation actually prevents you from emitting arbitrary energy photons, gravitons in this case. Now, however, in a conformal primary basis, these vertex operators associated with operators that involve all energies actually do make sense. And what extending this integral from zero to lambda to an integral from zero to infinity actually puts the soft photons that appear in the dressings in a conformal primary basis So it turns them into conformal primary operators of dimension delta, in the delta equal to 1 in the usual story. And here, really, this dressing should be regarded as just the generalization of that delta equal to 1 case to include all delta equal to 2, 3, 4, and so on and so forth, which, okay, they won't, they don't have anything to do with infrared divergences, but they still may be relevant because of their transformation properties, because of the fact that they transform nicely under these Tower of Soft theorems. So, yeah, that's this answer your question.
Hi, so here for the existence of these towers of operators, you're requiring certain falloff conditions.
Yeah,
and
we do.
So usually when I see towers of light, and especially like massless operators, my thought is that we're in some sort of infinite distance limit in some sort of moduli space. And so I'm wondering if there's an interpretation of these falloff conditions as kind of existing in a moduli space, and that relaxing these falloff conditions might be controlled in some way.
Moduli, what kind of moduli space do you have in mind?
Well, I don't know if it would be some sort of moduli space of these falloff conditions, for instance.
Oh,
but,
moduli space of falloff conditions.
If there's some controlled way to kind of pull back from the massless case, but.
Maybe you can discuss. I'm not sure, actually.
Okay.
But yeah, maybe you can discuss later. I need to understand that better.
Yes. So just to make sure I understand, so the usual about the basis, the integer basis.
Yeah, yeah.
The usual statement is that these conformal primary wave functions form a basis for radiative wave packets.
Mm.
Of course, your higher spin tower is not. They don't correspond to radiative modes. But yet you are saying they form a basis if I take the same, so you take the same Klein or spin 2 inner product, and by imposing these two restrictions, UV and IR, you manage to find that it's.
Yeah, I glossed over again here. Yeah. It's important. So orthogonality actually you can kind of show for the two sets anyways, regardless, but completeness is a bit tricky.
Mm-hmm.
So to actually show completeness of these wave, like of these integer wave functions, you have to assume that, you know, what you're going to find is some, you know, when you look at the usual completeness relation, you're going to find some delta function, and this delta function is only a delta function when you regard it as a distribution acting on functions that have these certain falloff conditions. Otherwise, you cannot. So in other words, let me put it differently. So usually, also, when we compute scattering amplitudes, you don't scatter plane waves, but you scatter wave packets. And so here, what we kind of show is that if you restrict your attention to signals that are sufficiently localized as a function of U, as well as in Fourier space, so they're very localized, they fall off, then on this set of signals, one can show that the conformal primary wave functions, this full tower, form a set of, in particular, complete wave functions, orthogonal and complete wave functions.
And what's the role of the shadow here in this context, do you?
Ah, the shadow, yeah. I mean, I expect the shadow will just give you a different,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, a different base. We haven't really looked at the shadow, but because we just started with the melon. You see, when we started, sorry. This definition just this only has the usual piece. Typically, you would have like a shadow piece, or you can consider a shadow transform of these conformal primary wave functions as well. But we just worked with this the Mellin transform rather than linear combinations or whatever or shadows.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's thanks Anna.